Well, we're going to talk about politics. And so politics in the church. Now, you got to understand, I tend to love debating politics. I'm a little bit of, I guess what they call a poop disturber, in that I love to just agitate just a little bit, because I grew up with a dad who was in politics. He was the president of the social credit riding over in the Kootenays. He had his mic turned off by Premier Bennett when they were debating the seatbelt legislation, because my dad was against it. My dad was against government interference in our lives. And he literally said to Premier Bennett, I remember he got up on the floor, he told the story, and others told me too. He got up and he said, "What's next? Mandated 500 milligrams of vitamin C because it's going to make us live longer and be healthier?" You know, and he was just that kind of, you know, always arguing for, you know, stay out of our face, government, and let us just live our lives, right? So I guess you could call that a bit of a redneck, maybe. I also grew up in an era when I can recall distinctly when the first Trudeau was in power, and he was not a household word. So when they mandated French and they changed to the metric system, you know, that just got my dad's goat over and over again. And I can remember coming home and he'd look at my report card, and remember they mandated you had to take French in school? My dad was so irate. He said, "Oh, I can't believe they're making you take French," you know. So he'd look at my report card, he'd go, "A, math, science, A, you know, biology, A, you know, French, C minus. Hey, way to go." It was like, if I failed French, he would give me a high five or something. It was like, you know, he was just, I grew up with that, like him and his friends, they'd sit around the Husky station, you know, where the truckers would come in, they'd have their burger and their coffees and stuff, and they would just argue politics all the time. So I grew up with the arguments of politics. It was right up there, right next to religion when it came to debates and discussions that went on. So having grown up in that milieu, I look at today's scenario, and sometimes I find it, on one hand, I find it incredibly weak, because I find out, like, a lot of people don't even want to argue any of the finer points of politics. You know, nowadays, if you try to argue something, people go, oh, you're mad at me, or you're against me. You know, when it comes to politics, you know, it's just an argument. It's not about you personally, but you can have an argument about something, right? That's how I grew up. But there was a day when in our culture, we debated truth. We debated issues. In fact, people laugh at the parliament buildings because they say, oh, that rhetoric and all the stuff they're doing. Well, honestly, some of it is rhetoric and some of it you say is silly. But at the same time, politicians are given a task to argue. If you're in the royal opposition, your job is to argue on behalf of Her Majesty the Queen. You're her loyal opposition. And your job is to make sure the government's held accountable in terms of wading through every issue. You know, and so when people argue, we tend to go, ooh, ooh, ooh. You know, there is a place for it. Politics is about arguing. It's about debating and about trying to come to an agreement on what kind of a motion should be passed and what kind of law should be instituted. And so we need to have an openness about that. But in our culture, when we get arguing about stuff, people start getting all kind of, ooh, and it gets somewhat hurtful. And I think today we're living in a day when Christians, especially, but just even our culture, is really struggling with how to grapple with our political climate. So right now, we have a couple things going that are quite interesting. We have a vote that just happened in the EU, where the UK pulled out or made a decision that they would like to exit from the European Union. And it was quite controversial and quite a debate in the UK, and it affects us over here. There's a lot of discussion going on. But even maybe overshadowing that is the politics south of the border, where we see Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. I mean, who would have thought that would have been your two candidates that we're going to be looking to elect? One of them is going to get elected president. Yeah, and if this doesn't describe it, I think Barna Group did a study on evangelical Christians. And in his study, he discovered that Trump is viewed unfavorably by 67% of evangelical Christians. 67% of evangelical Christians do not favor Donald Trump. 81% do not favor Hillary Clinton. We are in some unprecedented times when literally there is a whole group of people that literally don't like any of the options. In fact, Albert Moore, who is the president of Southwestern Baptist, and I have this quote here on the screen, I think, he said, Christians in the U.S. are now going to face a very excruciating set of decisions. Many of us are going to be facing the reality that if Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nominee and Donald Trump is the Republican nominee, we will not be able to vote in good conscience for either. Now, that's the president of a seminary. Now, on the contrary, you guys are well aware of the fact that there are different leaders lining up to get their support behind Donald Trump, lining up to get their support behind others, who are saying, we stand behind Donald Trump or we stand behind Hillary Clinton. So Christian leaders will still speak up and say, this is where we need to go. The reality is that many Christians are just not happy. They're just not liking the option. In fact, a good poll, not a Christian poll, but just another poll, stated that many people, if this is how it keeps going, are considering not voting at all. Or if there were a third choice, an independent choice that's going to be on the ballot, they will vote for that independent choice just because they just don't like the other two. It's going to be a very interesting election that's coming up. And of course, we know that the American politics does affect Canada. We know that what happens south of the border is actually important to us. It influences us, especially when you have talk about unsettling the trade agreements or things like that. You have that concern that how's this going to affect us in an economic way. So you think about the unsettledness. Think about the UK. I was just imagining this. You can just maybe go off this slide or back to the other one if you want. In the UK, Scotland voted 2 years ago whether they should leave the UK. They lost. The people that were pushing to leave the UK lost. And so the country was a bit divided over the issue of we're still in the UK. 2 years later, they're still hurting and smarting and trying to figure out who they are and their identity over this. And 2 years later, they have to vote for the EU. And the majority of Scots voted to stay in the EU. Only to find out that the rest of the UK, which they, I guess, finally realized we're part of the UK, had voted to leave. Think about how the Scotland is feeling right now. How torn they must be. You know, we couldn't leave the UK, and now we're leaving the EU, and we don't want to leave the EU. I mean, it's just the amount of... I just imagine being a part of that culture, walking in the community, sitting at the coffee shop, having discussions with people about how they're feeling about these things. There's a lot of unrest that's going on. The question is, does God care about this stuff? The question that was asked is there a Christian candidate? And I would think about any election coming up. We'll have elections coming up again here soon. Is there a Christian candidate? And if so, how are we supposed to evaluate them? You know, many people, that's one of their thoughts are, is that person a Christian or not? Should that even be a consideration? That's one of the things we want to look at. So I want to just wade into this topic of politics just a little bit. I'm not going to tell you the white way to vote. I'm not going to suggest something I would tell our Americans, you should vote this way or that way. But I want to just look at a couple of scriptures and see what we can from God's view there. So the Matthew 22 is where I want to go to start with. And in Matthew 22, Jesus is confronted by some Pharisees. Now, I'm going to set the stage to remind you of what the political condition was. Pharisees represent the leadership of the nation of Israel. They represent some of the ruling parties. However, they are not totally in charge because Rome has taken over the land of Palestine, and it is Rome who dominates that landscape. Roman soldiers are there making sure the Pax Romana is kept. The Roman peace is kept. So you have the Romans who are in political power, but you have the Pharisees who culturally are the leaders of the land. And they're supposedly leading a land under the name of God, according to the Ten Commandments and the laws of God. Then you have the Romans who don't care about God at all. They have Caesar as their God, and other gods are allowed. So the Pharisees come to him, and they want to trap him in a political question. In a time when people are not happy with the Romans. They're not happy about what's going on in their land. So they try to trap Jesus with this question. Then the Pharisees went out and laid plans to trap him in his words. They sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians. "Teacher," they said, "we know that you are a man of integrity and that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. You aren't swayed by others because you pay no attention to who they are. Tell us then, what is your opinion? Is it right to pay the imperial tax to Caesar or not?" So at the heart of it is this question, the most hated thing that they have. We have to keep paying taxes to Caesar. Okay, this is how taxation worked back then. And to be honest, when I look back at it, I think, what a horrible system. But then again, I wonder if we are any better off. So here it is. Caesar has to pay for all his campaigns. He has to pay for all his military battles. And so he has to say, we need to collect taxes. So he franchises the collecting of taxes throughout all of the Roman Empire. And he appoints people into an area and says, you have the right to go collect taxes here. People are bidding for this. It's like a company thing. I'll take the right to do Palestine. So if someone gets the right to go into Palestine and they get to collect the taxes, they employ people to go and collect the taxes. Caesar doesn't care what the tax rate is. He only says, this is how much money you have to bring me. Whatever they collect beyond that is theirs to keep. So off go the tax collectors and these business people who are going to raise a lot of money, and they tax the people. And they have to sort of watch how they're doing it, because they can't crush the people, because then they'll have no taxes a year from now. So they have to leave them enough to live on, but tax enough that they can get rich and have a lot left over after they pay Caesar. So this is what they're doing. They're going out and they're collecting money from people, and then they're turning around and they're giving Caesar his money and getting rich on the rest. So these local people that are getting rich, they're hated. They're hated by the Jewish people. The average person is just like, oh, I can't stand these tax collectors. They're just getting rich off of our misery, and they're using Caesar as an excuse to get rich. They didn't have to collect that much, but they collected it just so they can get rich. So they hate it. So this big question here just goes right to the heart of where these people are feeling politically. I hate paying taxes to Caesar. So that's the question. So they'll go to the next screen. But Jesus, knowing their evil intent, said, "You hypocrites, why are you trying to trap me?" Jesus would, you know, he never ran for office, but boy, would he do a good job. He just couldn't trap this guy. He says, "Show me the coin used for paying the tax." They brought him a denarius, and he asked them, "Whose image is this?" And here's an example of a coin that Caesar would have minted and handed out to his people on the image there. And he asked them, "Whose image is this and whose inscription?" And they say, "Oh, it's Caesar." Then he said to them, "So give back to Caesar what is Caesar and to God what is God's." And when they heard this, they were amazed. So they left him and they went away. Jesus had brilliant answers to them. And his answer to them was, don't try to trap me into your political nightmare. That's not what I am about. I'm here as God's emissary to talk to you about the spiritual matters. You're trying to drag me into your local political scene when my situation is a little different than what you're dealing with right here. And so he's able to navigate his way through this, even though he greatly impacted the political climate, even though he greatly changed the politics of his day. So I was looking at this and deciding on it. There's three things I felt in my heart to say to you today that I feel be encouragements about how we look at politics and how we view it. And the first thing is, we're not living in Christendom anymore. Okay? Get over it. Seriously. It's not Christendom. We've lived our lives with this illusion that somehow we're a Christian nation. And the Americans have it even stronger because they have this stronger sense of being a Christian nation, one nation under God, you know. And we sing "God Keep Our Land," which may one day just come right out of the national anthem. And that'll be a political debate we'll get into. And we could say, I hate when they change that. But the question is this. We have to just be realistic, okay? We don't live in a Christian nation. Christendom is a time when you could say that the culture and the spiritual practices of the people were one and the same. So if you were to go to Somalia right now, to be a Somali is to be a Muslim. That's what they would tell you. To be a Somali is to be a Muslim. That's why it's one of the most persecuted places for Christians in the world. Because there is no tolerance. It's not okay to be Somali and Christian. That is punishable by death. Somali is to be Christian. Well, see, and at one time we were that kind of a Christian nation where to be British was to be Christian, to be German was to be Lutheran, in one country was to be one religion, to be Texan. One of the few places where Christendom still exists is in Texas, believe it or not. Because to be a Texan is to be a Baptist, to be a Christian. And that's kind of the way it is down there. You could talk Jesus in Texas all you want. Everybody's like, that's fine. Because you're Texan, you're Christian. And it's one of the few remaining places where Christendom might hold out. Quebec was in Christendom for quite a few years until the last 50 years. But they were one of the last strongholds of Christendom as well. They were one of the most dominant Christian areas around. Where the premier always would talk to the archbishop before he made major decisions. Because the church and the culture were one and the same. That doesn't exist anymore. And somehow I think when we deal with politics, one of the first things we have to get in our heads is realize we're not living under a Christian nation. And I think that was a struggle even in Jesus' day when he talked about this stuff, because I think there was this dichotomy in their hearts too, because they were Israel. We are God's nation. We are founded by the Ten Commandments. But in reality, they were invaded by the Greek culture. No offense, Stavros, but the Greek culture had taken over. All of the wealthy people wanted to put their kids in the Greek school. They wanted them to learn Greek because that was the place, that was the modern context for which you want to grow. And it's why it was always debated in their culture was, if you're a really true Jewish person, you didn't go to that Greek school. But that was... the land was largely, I could almost say secular, if you were to say it today. It's a religious culture, but they were not really strongly practicing Jews. And so, but there was this still sense that we are God's nation, and yet it's Rome that's in charge. So I think when Jesus even says, listen, get over it. Caesar is in power. Pay him his taxes. It's his money, his name, and his face on this coin. That's, give it to him. Like, you want me to fight that battle. I'm not here to take Caesar off his throne. That's not why I came. And I think you and I have to kind of get used to the fact that our prime minister is not necessarily going to be a Christian. And if we assume that he has to be a Christian, then we're assuming that somehow we're still living in Christendom and that we're going to have such a struggle every time we have these political debates because we just can't comprehend how a non-Christian could be voted for or how we can elect a non-Christian into power. It's a struggle. I think we have to recognize that we are living in a non-Christian nation. And yet, the Bible tells us that we need to continue to pray for those in governing authority over us. Romans 13. Look at what it says in Romans 13, verses 1 and 2. It says, let everyone be subject to governing authorities. For there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, whoever rebels against the authorities, rebelling against what God has instituted. And those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. Now, my dad passed away far too young, so I was quite young, 25, when he died. I wish he was alive today because I would love to have this debate. Because I don't remember how my dad handled this text here when he lived in his rebellion against governing authorities. But I'd love to just be able to challenge him and say, how do you feel about this submitting to Trudeau and his politics? How do you feel about praying and honoring those people that are in leadership? You know, he'd say, well, I was different. No, we're talking... Paul writes this at a time when Rome is in power. And the governing authorities were oftentimes corrupt and appointed by family and privileged position. And yet still, Paul could say, let everyone be subject to governing authorities. And if you go on in the verse, if you were to go and read a little further, you'd see how he breaks it out. Because he does talk a little bit again about the realities that Jesus Christ is who we follow. But in our culture and our land, there are governing authorities that we must respect. So we want to look at that. The question is this. Is the goal of our church to regain the throne? Is the goal of the church to create a Christian prime minister? Because That's sometimes what it feels like is our goal. And that can come from a few reasons. One of them is how you view the Ten Commandments. So in the philosophy or the theology we practice, the Ten Commandments are gone. Jesus Christ is the new commandment. And Jesus Christ, love and serving Christ. He said, I put my command in your heart. So we're dead to the Old Testament law. But in the Reformed approach, so I talk about some of the Calvinistic churches, the Presbyterians and others, there is a trend amongst many of the Reformed theologies where they believed that only the sacrificial law was done away with. And then in their tradition, they debate between the moral law and the judicial law. And some will say it's only the moral law that remains in effect. So in other words, honor your mother and father. That's a moral law. That remains in effect. Do not murder. That's a moral law. So those things are still in effect. You still have to obey those commandments. And the others would say, well, the judicial ones are there as well. How you govern. And this is what happens is you have a group and a tradition that believe that government is supposed to be Christian. Government is intended to do to, we're intended to have people in government who will adjudicate our land God's way. And so it's hard because they can't compromise and accept someone who's not a Christian. It's just like, oh, it's so hard. And it makes it difficult to approach politics if a person's not a Christian. And I think that that's one of our struggles is we have to learn to recognize that politics is different than the role of the church. And so we have to be able to somehow engage in politics without having to make everyone a Christian. So in our tradition, we actually believe the Ten Commandments are done. And we don't feel that same sort of onus that you have to somehow get all those judicial laws back in force. Now, it doesn't mean that we aren't influenced by the moral law of God and we're not influenced by the judicial laws. We still think that justice should be carried out and that punishment is okay. So Christians tend to be a little bit harder on punishment in terms of, hey, put them in prison. You know, the debate used to be that, you know, even hang the person. What do you call that again? Capital punishment. You know, we used to, we'd be okay with that because we felt like that was a biblical concept. And so it's okay if someone takes a life that you take their life. That was considered to be acceptable because we justify that too from the Bible. And so those debates kind of continued. We have to wrestle through how we're going to approach politics in terms of recognizing that people that are in power are not necessarily Christians. I personally don't vote people just because they're Christians. I vote people because I want to know what their political stand is. I want to know how they will govern. That's what I'm interested in. Now, the Bible tells me that God will put the people in power. But just because someone's a Christian doesn't mean I'm going to vote for them. And so many times you'll hear people say, oh, that person's a good Christian. And I think that's one of the struggles we're having in the States is that people feel like Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, neither of them have any kind of strong sense that they honor God in their lives. Even Donald Trump just says so many bizarre things, it's hard to imagine that he will honor God in his life. And Hillary Clinton, you know, there's a sense that I don't think she's really going to try to live this personal holiness life or anything. So that's why I think Christians are struggling with the idea of how can I make this decision then? Well, I'm suggesting to you is this. It isn't always about a Christian decision. It's about a governance decision. So it comes down to actually having to figure out what governing policies need to be made. And that's where that debate should lie. So the first thing is just remember, it's not a Christian nation anymore. Not that I wouldn't love to see more Christians in politics and more Christians striving for leadership. But I don't necessarily suggest that the goal of the church is to take over government. Number two, the church cannot become relegated to a special interest or lobbyist group. The church cannot be restricted to a special interest lobbyist group. Too many times we're seeing it portrayed in the paper that the church is a place where we're a lobbying campaign for certain things, for God's way and God's view. And so we're always trying to say that. And the problem, of course, is that when Christians hold up placards and say their particular opinion on behalf of God, they're assuming that all the other Christians believe the same thing. Or sometimes they're creating an image that that's how everybody feels on a political spectrum. And there are some things we're more unified on. There are many areas in politics that we may not agree on. There is possible to be a liberal and a Christian. It's possible to be a conservative and a Christian. Both camps can be there. We don't necessarily speak for God always in our political views. And we must not be reduced to just some kind of special interest lobbyist group. 1 Timothy 2 is one of these other great scriptures that has to do with politics a little bit. It says, I urge you then first that all petitions, prayers, intercession, thanksgiving be made for all people. In verse 2, for kings and all those in authority, that we may live peaceful and quiet lives in all godliness and holiness. This is good. And it pleases God our Father, who wants all people to be saved and to come to a knowledge of the truth. So God's goal is that all people will be saved. Our goal politically is that we pray that God will help create peace, some stability, so that we can do the job of witnessing and evangelizing. Because that's where we want to focus, is helping people come to faith in Jesus Christ. So our goal isn't to try to change our laws. Like even I have these debates with people sometimes about the laws regarding homosexuality. So the new reform, the new conservative party that's being rebuilt in parliament right now because they lost, right? So, and you'll see this. You're going to see this drift away from the Christian right. We call it the Christian right. There was a strong sense that Christians were influencing that party. And now you see this sort of pull away a little bit. Some of the moralistic stands like homosexuality or issues like that were being brought up are going to be sort of steered away from a little bit. As they say, we're just going to leave that issue alone. The pro-life stance, we're not going to go there. They don't want to go there. Okay? And I just am a little bit nervous because I feel sometimes that we want to make that the center of the political statement. I would have no problem, and I'm going to say my opinion. It's my opinion. I'm not speaking for the Lord. I'd have no problem for myself to be a politician, to go in there and to say, I'm not going to bring up the pro-life issue. But you're a Christian. Yeah. This is not about my Christianity. This is about what's right for our governing right now to move our place forward. There is another way we can approach that issue. And the church can do a lot of influence on people's lives. But when it comes to the political statement, we don't have to act on every moral issue we feel. Like, nope, we have to deal with that now. There's a time and a place for things. And sometimes it's okay to put something aside and say we're not going to deal with it. That doesn't make me not a Christian. That doesn't mean I don't believe in a certain conviction. Like, when we make everything about Christianity and sort of bully our candidates to come out and make statements about everything, we handicap sometimes our people so they can't make the decisions they need to make. I think we need to support them, encourage them, and help them to make their decisions. And I just share that with you, that I think that sometimes we diminish the role of the church to a lobbyist group. And I think we're so much more than that. We're so much more than that. The Bible says we're here to win people to the Lord. We're here to make a difference in the lives of people. We must not become relegated to special interest groups trying to lobby people to place more value on Christianity. Again, as if our goal was to use the political spectrum to create a Christian nation. There's another way we can do that. So number three was that the government does not hold the hope for our world. The government does not hold the hope for our world. This is critical in the issue of politics, because the struggle that's in the hearts of people over things like, I was watching a little bit that EU issue with UK and stuff, and you even look at how people on mainland Europe are responding to it. There's this sense of fear and panic that somehow you're going to wreck the peace that we're trying to build here. And we, once in a while, we as Christians have to sort of shake our head a little bit and go, whoa, what do you mean? Was my peace ever coming from this free trade agreement or from this nation alliance or this being a part of the EU? Is that where my peace was coming from? Was that what was going to create the security for our nation? Or did I believe that God was overseeing that? Did I believe that my faith is where my peace comes from? Because as Christians, we get caught up sometimes in this idea that our hope and our peace is going to come through political maneuvering. And it doesn't. But this has been the way it has been since the beginning. Since the beginning. And it was the same when Jesus was confronted by these Pharisees. It was like, we need a political solution. And Jesus says, I'm not here to give you a political solution. Jesus said, I come to seek and save those who are lost. I came to minister to the poor. So even within the poor, Len was telling me about a book he was reading. And it was about the political Christian view on helping the poor. You know, there's a... And down in Latin America and South America and many parts of the world where Christianity has grown, there has been this rise of we need to deal with the poor. Right? You have the Pope talking about how we as a church got to get back to the needs of the poor. And some of that is used as leverage to make it about politics. It's about creating a Christian government that will minister to the poor. It doesn't necessarily... Jesus was talking about ministering to the poor and the sick, but he wasn't talking about creating social structures. He was talking about lay hands on them and they shall be healed. He was talking about bring them into your community and care for them. The widows that have nowhere to go and nowhere to look after them, they should be looked after. And so social care and social programs have always actually come from the Christian culture. The NDP was formed by Christian values, by a Christian who wanted to minister to the poor. It's always influenced our way of life. And it does influence our politics, but our hope is not coming through politics. It's coming through Christ. It's coming through His Spirit and what God is going to do in the world. Genesis chapter 12 has an interesting story, and it's right from the very beginning. It says, now the whole world had one language and a common speech, and as people moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. Keep going. They said to each other, come, let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly. And they used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. In other words, they were progressive. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we will be scattered over all the face of the earth. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower that people were building. And the Lord said, if as one people speaking the same language, they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Come, let's go down and confuse their language so they will not understand each other. This was at the beginning of time when God said, go and populate the earth. They were coming together to create themselves a nice territory where we can be in unity, build a strong tower, and be secure. It's the same thing we're doing today. It's the same thing happening in the EU where people are saying, let's all get together. Let's build one big wall. Let's be one people. And then we'll be strong and secure. And we'll have money. And we'll have safety and social programs. And there's nothing we can't do. Like, man has never stopped since the day that God scattered his language to try to get back to the place where they can build this unity. So they can find their peace. And all through history, God keeps letting us do that over and over until we finally come to grips that we won't find peace in political systems. There's only one God who can bring peace to our life and to our world. There's only one way, and it's through Jesus Christ. And so we try so often with political situations to bring peace into our life, and it doesn't work. And the ultimate end time story is about an antichrist who will make a one world government and Jesus Christ who will smash it and set up his eternal rule as the divine monarch of our life and who will reign over us with benevolence. But we are still, as humans, striving to create some kind of political utopia, and we have to be careful as Christians not to get caught up in it. We are citizens of another country, citizens of a heavenly kingdom. So when you get into the political realm, absolutely, I think it's fantastic. Get involved in politics. But remember, this is about your cultural involvement as citizens of Canada. This is not about how you're going to bring peace and wealth and health to our nation. It's about how you're going to help us to work together as a nation. But the only place that peace comes is through Jesus Christ. And so I believe that when you look at the fear that's going on in the European Union right now, It's an unsettledness. And the only real answer for that is you need to stop looking at the EU for your source of peace. And you need to start looking to Jesus. And I think the same can go for us as we talk about how do I handle all this political stuff that's going on. And I conclude with this encouragement to you. There is a world that is unsure and uncertain. And some of them are, they get right bent out of shape when they talk about this. I mean, just get someone to talk about Donald Trump somewhere. Just say, what do you think of Donald Trump? And see what happens. Right? Oh, man, they just start going, you know. Like, they can get right bent out of shape. How do you respond to that? I've asked myself that a few times. How do I respond to that? And I've been challenged by this, being reminded we are not to be sucked in to the issue of whether or not that's where peace or joy is going to come from. We have an opportunity in the midst of this political chaos to be confident, to be self-assured, to stand there and say, well, you know what, it's interesting times. But you don't look like you're going to lose it, because if somebody gets elected, oh boy, my life's going to fall apart. No, it's not. You know what? Political leaders come and political leaders go. My hope is in Jesus Christ. He has been the security that I've needed, and no matter what happens politically, I have a testimony of God who has made peace in my heart. And that's where it rests. I think we have a tremendous opportunity to speak peace into the hearts of people today. We may have a hard time knowing who to vote for in the polls, but we shouldn't have a hard time knowing how to give testimony to the peace and faith that's in our hearts. And I think that's the most important issue that I want us to be reminded about. Come on back, worship team. We're going to close with a song. I just want to encourage you. If you find yourself getting really agitated about the political situation, do a heart check and say, am I agitated because I'm worried about my peace and security? And then surrender it back to God again. And say, Lord, you are my peace. You are my foundation. I'm a citizen of the heavenly kingdom, right? And it can't be shaken. And then when it comes to the political scene, you can rest assured looking at it and saying, well, that's an interesting discussion. Engage the discussion, but do so from a place of quiet confidence and a place of calm, so that if your candidate doesn't get in, you say, that's okay. We're going to keep going. If they make some stupid law about euthanasia and say it's okay to kill old people, well, I don't like that law, but you know what? We're still going to find a way to move forward. Maybe it's just because I'm young. I don't know. Some of you might be more worried than I am, but if the issue as we go forward is that laws don't go the way we want them, God is in charge. And I always be confident that, because I know that politicians largely are not going to honor God. I just lowered my expectations just a little bit. But I know that God is supreme, and I trust Him.